Welcome to Short Hops, powered by RotoWire.com. Derek Van Riper here, as always, with Bernie Pleskoff. Only a couple weeks to go in spring training, which means the games are going to count before we know it. What's going on today, Bernie?
Hey, Derek. I think it's getting down to be crunch time. You're going to see a lot of cuts. You're going to see a lot of decisions being made in the next 2 weeks. This is the meat and potatoes of spring training time.
Yeah, you're going to see regulars playing more games, of higher volume, but also playing deeper into games now too, which I think is going to give you a better idea on some job battles, where some players might be in their recovery from injuries. There's actually a little more you can learn in terms of how players are utilized over the last 2 to 3 weeks of spring training, as opposed to those first couple of weeks where there are more guys in camp and it's really more just about getting everybody back into the swing of things. Now it's more about making sure you've got the right mix of 25 guys for the opening day roster.
That's right. Now you're going to see pitchers go 4 this week, 5 next week, or in their next start, and then hopefully 6.
All right, so we're going to take a look at some injuries before we dive into some other things. Injuries today, we'll talk some job battles. A few other spring training observations will be in the mix, too. We're also going to have second base and shortstop rankings. Going to use 2 positions today, so that's going to take up a good chunk of the conversation. I also have 1 mailbag question that we're going to get to. But on the injury front, it seems like this is going to be the theme each week as we talk leading into opening day. We have a couple pitchers that are down for the season. Zach Wheeler has suffered a torn UCL in his elbow. It seemed like an issue that actually started to surface last year, although I know Wheeler's agent came out today and said the Mets didn't do anything wrong as far as how they handled him. But the news came down over the weekend. Zach Wheeler will not have a 2015 season, Bernie.
Well, there's another guy that had a partial tear or at least inflammation or pain, what have you, and decided to wait it out, and then all of a sudden, you know, it tears, and they have confirmation of it, and now he's going to have Tommy John surgery, which puts him 12 to 16 to 18 months from now.
Yeah, it could be the second half of 2016 before we see Zach Wheeler back in game action for the Mets. This is one area where they actually do have pretty considerable depth. You look at what they've got. Dylan G is going to step into the rotation initially. But the absence of Wheeler puts Noah Syndergaard one step closer to the rotation. Steven Matz is one step closer. I think for now, Rafael Montero is going to pitch out of the bullpen. Does this make you more excited about the possibility of taking the chance on one of those young starters, whether it's Syndergaard or Matz, as you look in the later rounds of your drafts?
I definitely think I would put either or both of them on the bench for me, because I don't think they're going to go with 5 starters in New York for the season. So either Matz or Syndergaard are going to get a call. I don't know in which order, but they are both very worthy starting pitchers to have on your bench.
I think I like Syndergaard a little bit more. I pitched at AAA last year. The results weren't great, but as we've talked about many times, the Pacific Coast League is a difficult place to pitch. And Las Vegas is one of the more difficult environments for a home environment to deal with. I think there's a little more there in terms of Syndergaard being major league ready, but Matt certainly is not far behind. The other big pitching injury, Cliff Lee, has already been placed on the 60-day DL. He's dealing with a tear in the flexor tendon in his forearm. He's probably going to need surgery. And again, I think we talked about last week, if he has surgery, he has said that he would consider retirement. I think this is going to be the beginning of the end, and I think we kind of mentioned it last week, but now that he's on the 60-day DL, I'm not even taking a flyer on him as a late-round pick.
No, I think we've seen the end of Cliff Lee. I don't know how he's going to come back from this. Okay, so let's say he rests. Then he's got to go through spring training again. Then he's, you know, to get his arm stretched out. I don't think we're going to see him in 2015. And if that's the case, 2016 is the closest he'll get. And will the problem linger?
Yeah.
I think Cliff Lee is probably done.
Unless he completely changes course as far as being willing to rehab back from surgery, I think that's just where we're at on him. In the event that he were to pitch this year, we're talking July, like late second half, like after the All-Star break at the absolute earliest. And even then, it just seems improbable that he'd be able to deal with the torn flexor tendon. The injury bug's been hitting the Rays hard early this spring. Alex Cobb has forearm tendonitis. He is likely headed to the disabled list for opening day. Drew Smyly has been dealing with a shoulder issue. He's expected to also miss at least a start when the season begins. And Alex Colomé has been slowed by pneumonia after having visa issues that delayed him getting to camp. You look at the Rays right now, Bernie. Nate Karns looks like he's a lock for the rotation to start the year. Birch Smith is probably in, and Matt Andreese might be in as well. Like, this is a team that typically has pretty good pitching depth, but three injuries will wreck just about any rotation.
This is a really very difficult situation for them because this is a pitching-first club, and if they can't pitch, I don't know how they're going to score runs. These are devastating blows, especially with Cobb. Colomé was on my list for breakouts this year, and I think he'll be back sooner than later, and he will claim a rotation spot at some point. Nate Karns is the guy that's going to benefit the most from this. But this does not bode well for the Tampa Bay Rays. They have to pitch to win.
They do have a really strong bullpen. I like McGee once he gets back, paired with Boxberger, Kevin Jepsen, Kirby Yates. If they can turn Ernesto Frieri around, he could turn out to be an asset. Jeff Beliveau, I think, is okay. Jose Dominguez is a hard thrower. So it's possible that they maybe take this sort of Royals look as the season goes on. But the starting pitching is so depleted here to begin the year. You just got to hope for their sake they don't fall too far behind. Karns, as you mentioned, probably of the group, the most experienced pitcher they're going to be adding to the rotation. I know you've had a chance to see Birch Smith at least once maybe in the fall league. He's a hard thrower, but what has kept him from finding success at the top level? Is he one of those guys like Trevor Rosenthal where he can throw high 90s or even touch 100, but it's really flat? I mean, what's the problem for Birch Smith?
When I saw him in the fall league, I was not impressed. He could not throw strikes. I looked to him to come out and win a job somewhere. It just didn't happen, and he was not one of the best pitchers in the fall league. I only got to see him twice. Of those times, he couldn't throw strikes. Maybe that was just those times that I saw him, but I think he's going to scuffle a bit. I'm not ready to put all my chips in the pot for Birch Smith.
At least for the Rays, they will also get Matt Moore back from Tommy John surgery at some point this year. So could be a lot of reinforcements progressively getting back into the equation for Tampa. I think Colomé is probably the best bet to get back first, only because neither of his ailments were injury-related. I mean, visa issues and then pneumonia are just things that, you know, once he's healthy enough to throw again, he'll throw again and progress through his spring training a bit later than most. But definitely worried about the Rays as they are currently constructed with the injuries they're dealing with. Staying in the American League East, Bernie, Koji Ihara has a hamstring injury, but he can be ready for opening day. Even if he doesn't appear in spring training games between now and then, he thinks he might be ready to go. I know you've always liked Koji. I'm curious, do you still like him this year, given the way his 2014 season ended?
Yeah, I have to. He's their guy. You know, the hamstring, obviously, troubling injury, but I think he'll work himself through it. I don't like Boston's pitching in general at all, but I like their bullpen, and I like him at the back end of their bullpen, but I'm a little bit more guarded with that hamstring than I was before I heard about it.
Yeah, I think that's one other issue that you add in there. I mean, the arm doesn't seem like it would be problematic over a long stretch. Seems like a guy that, as you said many times, can throw every day and it won't impact him much, but he's going to be 40 years old this season. Eventually, it takes a lot longer to recover from injuries like that. I just wonder if we might be at that point for Koji Ihara. I mean, if he's down at any point during the year, whether it's early in the season, middle, later on, whatever it might be, who do you like as the next option up for saves? If you didn't hear anything from John Farrell, which reliever do you pick up in the hope of getting saves if Koji misses time? Is it Mujica? Is it Tozawa? Is it Ogando? Or is it somebody else entirely?
Well, those are three good names, but I like Mujica. But I think it'll go to Tozawa. You never know with those guys. Ogando, I've always liked. He's had shoulder issues. They are going to use him strictly out of the bullpen. No experimental starts for him. He is not a ninth inning guy, though. I think probably Mujica is more a ninth inning guy. That's the guy I'm looking to. But who knows? I mean, Those four guys, including Koji, form a very good setup and closing quad, quad of guys to go to.
Definitely a team that can be difficult to deal with as you get through the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning as they are currently built. Some injury news here from the Nationals. Anthony Rendon has been dealing with a grade 1 sprain of his MCL in his knee. As we know, Anthony Rendon's a player that had a lot of injury issues at Rice. That's the reason why he was not the first overall pick in his draft class. I mean, that's part of the reason why the Nats were able to get him a little bit further down the board instead of having to have that first overall selection. Now, Rendon surprisingly stole 17 bases last year, Bernie. That's the one number. When I look at his 2014 stat line, I really didn't see 17 steals coming. Now that he's got a knee injury going on this spring, and even though it may not silence him for opening day, I can't help but wonder if that stolen base count might get cut in half.
Well, not only that, but he is a very good trunk hitter. He uses his legs extremely well in driving toward the ball. If there's any part of his, he's got very good mechanics. And if anything is out of sync with him, it's going to impact him because everything flows so well. So if he is favoring that knee at all and can't push off it and can't stride, that gives me pause. Something, again, that we have to watch. And, Derek, we are just seeing so many injuries. It's unreal how it affects their big league club and our fantasy teams. We just don't know what to do.
Is spring training too long for position players? I mean, it seems like pitchers need the time to get stretched out safely, but is there just too much wear and tear on position players, having them show up in late February, putting them through an extra month of games?
Let me tell you what I think is a contributor. I don't think it's too much. I think it's the very hard infields in Florida and in Arizona. That sun breaks down on these infields, and these guys do not have much cushion. It's like playing in Toronto. When you play in Toronto all year long, you are pounding onto what is akin to cement. And these infields in Florida and in Arizona are not soft. They're hard on the knees. They're hard on the legs. And I do think it has an impact. And let's not forget that most of these young guys have been working out since November and December. So this is not just, let's go to camp in February and start hitting and playing defense. This has been going on for quite a few months already.
I would like to see a study, if it's happened, where you look at players that take some more time off in the offseason versus those who really sort of just continuously train. I mean, some players, non-playoff players, probably take October off in general. Like, you go through the long season, you take a month to recover, first week in November rolls around, you're back at it again. And that's probably pretty normal, but I'm curious if there are players out there who take 2 or 3 months off in the offseason, maybe pick up their activity a lot in January. I'd just be curious to see if they hold up better in the long run. But you might be right. It might just be the conditions in Arizona and Florida just being so dry that the fields are rock hard. You get these overuse sorts of injuries. You always hear about back strains and knee soreness and different things like that that come up this time of year. So maybe that's got something to do with it. One other injury item I want to get to: Chris Sale throwing from a mound. Sounds like he may be ready to pitch as soon as the White Sox second series of the regular season. Sale will not pitch on opening day, but maybe we'll see him as soon as April 12th against the Twins. Are you skeptical that he may only miss one start, or are you pretty confident that this is one of those injuries that sounded a lot worse at first than it actually is?
Well, I thought it was going to be two, and I'm not sure it won't be two. Because don't forget, he's got some catching up to do. It's not just that, he's 100% healthy. It's his arm stretched out. So there's work to be done in the next 15 days and then some. So I'm still saying two.
Speaking of the White Sox and sort of transitioning into job battles, one thing that really caught my eye yesterday, and it ties into what we talked about when we first started recording, Bernie, when you look at lineups this time of spring training, that is, when you look at those lineups, you can get a feel for what a manager or what a team thinks of a player. Yesterday, I saw what looked like an opening day lineup for the White Sox. The only modification is that Adam Eaton was given the day off. Micah Johnson was the starting second baseman. It wasn't Emilio Bonifacio. Bonifacio played in the same game, but he came off the bench and took over for Johnson after Johnson was used as the starter at second and the leadoff guy. Do you think Micah Johnson is slowly pulling away to win that second base job on the south side of Chicago?
It's very possible. I saw him play last week, and look, the guy can hit, and he can run, and that's what they like. He's a scrappy player. He's the only guy that I kept, the only minor leaguer I had in one of our two leagues. I think it's probably the stake league. No, it's the
staff keeper
league. He was my only minor leaguer. I've always liked Micah Johnson, and I do think if he doesn't start, I think he's their utility infielder, and I think he's going to play. He's a pretty good hitter.
Left-handed hitter, Gene Segura is a right-handed hitter, but is it fair on my part to compare Johnson and what he might do to Gene Segura? Because I think when you look at the numbers, I haven't seen Micah Johnson play, but if you look at his minor league numbers, he's shown better on base skills than Segura, an ability to draw walks, which is pretty impressive. The ability to hit for average, put a lot of balls in play and not strike out a lot, and the speed, as we mentioned. 2013, he had 62 steals just between low A and double A. Actually stopped at high A, too. Actually, he had 84 steals that year when you add it all up. I mean, that's a really big contributor on the base paths, and he was caught a decent amount, too. Last year, he had a leg injury, didn't run quite as often. Could he have a 35 to 40 steal type season if the Red Sox make him a super utility guy or give him that opportunity at second base? Could he contribute that way right away?
You said Red Sox, you mean White Sox. Yes, he very definitely could. He could hit 40 steals without a doubt. And I can't compare him to Segura. It depends on which Segura. The year that Segura broke out or last year. I think he's better than last year and not as good as Segura's best year. He's somewhere in between. But let's see if he can hit big league pitching and get on base. That'll be the key, because if he gets on base, he can steal and he will steal. I see 30, 40 stolen bases.
Yeah, it seems like I'd rather take him than Bonifacio even right now.
And, oh, yes, yes.
And Bonifacio always finds a way to get his bags, but long term, Micah Johnson, a much bigger part of what the White Sox want to do. Bonifacio is one of those guys. He's become a journeyman, kind of bounces around from team to team every year and even from deadline to deadline. Let's move on to the Diamondbacks. We talked about them a lot during the SiriusXM segment that you had with us today, Bernie, and they've got some issues all over the place. Let's start behind the plate, where they really haven't addressed catcher, and to make matters worse, Peter O'Brien's had some issues throwing the ball over the past week or so. Where do the Diamondbacks sit currently with their catcher spot?
Well, their Rule 5 guy, Hernandez, that they picked up is out. I think he's got a broken hammock bone, so he's gone, at least for quite a while. Tuffy Goswich is their catcher, and Gerald Laird is probably their backup catcher. I still think they need to go to Toronto or even to Chicago and get Wellington Castillo. There are guys out there that can be traded for, but I don't know what the reluctance is. There's something I don't know. And I think it's basically that this club wants Peter O'Brien to be their catcher come hell or high water, and he will be their catcher. It might be May. It might be April. You don't know. I think this throwing the ball back to the pitcher has been an issue. Throwing the ball through the infield has been an issue. And it's recent. It's just popped up. I think they'll get that corrected. But is he ready to assume a role as a big league catcher? I think they think he is.
I worry about it. I think I compared him to William Rosario in terms of a guy that can hit that doesn't necessarily have the defensive chops yet to play the catcher position. You can will it to happen. You can try to force it, and maybe it works out okay. But, I mean, some of the issues he had throwing the ball were simple things, like throwing the ball back to the pitcher, and every once in a while there are guys that have gone through that. Jared Saltalamacchia a few years back had an issue like that, and eventually he worked it out. He's since gone on to get a decent-sized contract in free agency, and he's obviously stuck behind the plate. I think the lack of alternatives puts them in that desperation spot where if they can go out and get Wellington Castillo or Deonor Navarro or just someone else that they're a little more comfortable with. I mean, the White Sox have a lot of catchers in camp. They've got Flowers, Rob Brantley, Adrian Nieto, who was a Rule 5 pick in 2013. They've got Giovanni Soto. Maybe they cast a guy off that the Diamondbacks go after. The Rockies.
Yeah, there's guys out there. You're right. There are guys out there. But for some reason now, I said to myself, well, this is just publicity. You know, this is just talk. And I thought, well, the first week has gone by, the second week has gone by, and they're standing firm. So apparently that's it.
I mean, Houston has Jason Castro, Hank Conger, Evan Gattis won't catch anymore, and Max Stassi, who's not far away. Like, they've got some depth behind the plate. There are teams that could move a catcher if they're inclined. Even in division, Colorado, they say Willen Rosario's the third catcher now. They've got Nick Hundley and Mike McHenry. I mean, if Rosario was your starter for three seasons, how is he no longer good enough to even be your backup?
Because they've seen enough. They've seen that he can't block balls in the dirt. I've seen it with my own eyes. And he works very hard. He's there early trying to do it. The footwork is just not there. The eye and the feet are not, the mind and the feet are not in sync. It's just not happening. If he's going to play, he's going to play some at first base because they don't have a DH.
What about A.J. Ellis? Seems like an extra guy right now for the Dodgers after the Yasmani Grandal deal. I mean, Grandal's expected to catch about two-thirds of the Dodgers' games if he stays healthy. Do they dare move A.J. Ellis to a team in division?
Well, I don't think they would be worried about moving him to Arizona. It's all a matter of who the Diamondbacks will give up in return. And they have a whole flock of pitchers. Even Trevor Cahill, if somebody wanted to take that salary, could be a good starting piece for some team. And I don't know what the Diamondbacks are going to do with Cahill.
Good news.
That's another question mark.
Good news for the Diamondbacks is that Trevor Cahill's contract is closing in on the end. I think he's got one more year on there. But Cody Ross's contract comes off the books in the relatively near future. I think this is the last year of his deal. So regardless whether he makes the team or not, they won't have to pay him beyond 2015. I always wonder, too, with the Giants. Like, they've got Andrew Susak behind the plate. He's a catcher that's received a lot of praise as one that could hit and actually handle an everyday sort of role. But they've got Buster Posey, and they've got Hector Sanchez, who's a pretty good backup, too. Maybe Susak's the kind of guy the Giants should be looking to trade. But again, it's in division. You don't often see young players get moved. You can see veterans more often get traded. But the Diamondbacks have a lot of holes, as you alluded to. One of the issues, I think, too, is Yasmani Tomas. Where is he really going to play? They're starting to use him in right field. Is he actually going to be a third baseman come opening day?
If he is not the third baseman, he has to move to left field, and that means that their two guys, Enciarte and Peralta, are going to be on the bench as fourth and fifth outfielders. Is that what you want? No. They want Tomas at third base instead of Lamb, and they want Peralta and Enciarte in left field. The issue that they have to determine, can Tomas play third base day in and day out and not cost them runs? And will his offense overshadow any weakness in his defense? Huge decision. And at least four or five players' careers for this year, not their career, this year, depend upon that decision. You're talking about Jake Lamb's playing time, not only the outfielder's playing time. So it's a tough one.
Am I wrong to like Jake Lamb? I think he's going to be a decent hitter.
No, you're not wrong. He is a decent hitter. You know, and he can hit lefties a little bit as a left-handed hitter. He's a good ball player. There's any doubt about it. He just needs to play. And for me, if he is not the third baseman, he's got to go back and play every day in the minor leagues. If he is the third baseman, leave him alone and let him hit against left-handed pitching, because I don't think you're winning the division. You may think you're winning the division. I don't think you are. And if, in fact, you're not, let Lamb play or let Tomas play third base and see what he is. Then, you know, I can't tell you. They are so boxed into a corner with this. These are really tough decisions, DVR.
Part of it, too, is that I think Peralta, in particular, exceeded expectations last year. I mean, they knew what he did in 2014 before they signed Tomas in November. But in terms of their long-term plans, I think David Peralta sort of forced his way into those with what he did upon arrival last year, and even Ender Inciarte exceeded expectations. I mean, like, this is a team that had a couple things go right in a year where most things went wrong last year. AJ Pollock was hurt, Mark Trumbo was hurt, Paul Goldschmidt was hurt, Aaron Hill played hurt. They traded away a bunch of veterans, Brandon McCarthy, Martin Prado. I mean, there was a lot of moving parts on this team last year. So I kind of like what Arizona's been able to do over the course of the offseason. The rotation's the other big job battle. I mean, Alan Webster, De La Rosa, Cahill. I think you mentioned Cahill's contract. That probably gives him a spot to begin the year. Most realistically, Bernie, it's Colemanter, Hellickson, Anderson, Cahill to start the year, and then a fifth starter out of that Webster, De La Rosa, Robbie Ray, maybe Randall Delgado still in the mix, although they moved him to the pen last year. He's pitched pretty well this spring. I mean, who do you see emerging to take over that fifth starter spot?
I don't think Robbie Ray's on the club. I think he's going to be in AAA. I think Delgado's in the bullpen, and I have no idea who the fifth starter is. I really do not. It is such a puzzle. With so many moving parts here that every day it could change. Cahill is a key. You know, if he makes the rotation, then they only need that fifth starter. If he doesn't make the rotation, he's not going to the bullpen. So maybe they trade him. Now, the other thing is that you've got this surplus of pitching. And if you want a catcher, maybe you go get a catcher with that pitching. That's the position of strength. They also are deep at middle infield with Nick Ahmed and with Pennington and with Hill and with Owings. So they've got four good middle infielders, and they really only need three. I don't know what they're going to do, clearly. And, of course, Lamb and Tomas at third. Goldschmidt is a fixture at first. One of their trade chips could be but won't be Mark Trumbo. You know, you could play Inciarte in right, Peralta in left, trade Trumbo. You know, power hitter, American League, designated hitter, big, big return, could be very tempting. I think they're on the phone every day. I really do. I don't think this is over yet, and I think this club will change dramatically in the next month.
He's a right-handed power bat. Maybe the Padres would be interested in using Trumbo at first base.
I don't think so. I don't think anybody's going to use Trumbo at first base. He is a designated hitter, and that's his future. If it's not in Arizona, he's a DH.
Unfortunately for Trumbo, it's sort of a short list of teams right now that have a clear vacancy in their DH spot. Many teams have a crowd, if you will, in that spot. Baltimore, Steve Pierce probably is the DH for now. Maybe you platoon him with Deaza and or Snyder, mix and match, play him a little at first. If Machado needs a day off, play Davis at third. I mean, I can see Trumbo being a guy that puts up some pretty big numbers at Camden Yards, although I like him as a hitter in Arizona if you're looking for cheap power. I just don't expect batting average from him.
No doubt about it.
All right, let's take a look at one other job battle here. This one caught my eye as I was scrolling through. It's not even so much that it's the Indians. Like, you follow this team closely, Bernie. What's going on in the middle infield with Jose Ramirez? Is he really going to be the starter for more than a month before Lindor comes up? And how do they make the pieces fit between right field, first base, and DH? Is it as simple as Santana and Moss with Swisher and Murphy sharing right, or is it more complicated than that?
Swisher is not going to play. He is not going to start the season. He will not be ready. I don't think he's ready until mid-April or May. So he's out of the equation in my mind. Ramirez is the shortstop, but Lindor's going to come up sooner than even I thought he would. He is just playing so well. And the guy that, if he scuffles at all, if Kipnis scuffles at all at second base, you can put Ramirez there and you can put Lindor at shortstop. The right field, I definitely think it's Murphy's job. I think he's going to get most of the playing time with Moss. Moss and Murphy in right field. Santana at first base. The other one is a DH, either Moss or Murphy. One of those guys at DH. And I don't think Swisher figures at all. Rayburn's going to be the right-handed hitter against left-handed pitching. Moss will DH. Murphy will play right field. Swisher will be on the the DL.
It does seem like Swisher taking a little longer than expected to come back from those knee surgeries. I'm optimistic once he gets healthy that he can still hit a little bit, but he has to get healthy for that to even be a relevant talking point at this stage. And again, it seems like he's really struggled lately while trying to run the bases and increase his activity. Bernie, before we move on to our second base and shortstop rankings, anything else that's really caught your eye this spring, either in the Cactus League or even through the Grapefruit League?
Well, I think it's interesting. If you look at San Diego's lineups in the last couple days, you're going to see the name Venable show up more and more in the outfield, which is very interesting to me. That tells me that they could be showcasing him. I think they're going to be playing Quentin and Venable quite a bit now. I think San Diego's ready to move one of those two or three outfielders that they have, give the job to Will Myers in center, get something for Venable or Quentin or who knows, one of their other outfielders. I just think you're going to see more and more of that. They're going to get their playing time in the spring, and they're going to try to move them. That's been very interesting to me. The other thing that interests me is how good Will Middlebrooks looks. I've been shocked, DVR. The ball is flying off this guy's bat. And, you know, he was hurt, and I kind of wrote him off as a mediocre hitter. He's under the radar, guys, and I'm telling you, Will Middlebrooks looks very, very good.
If you look at the power he's provided during his limited chances in Boston, and again, 2014, he was hurt when he tried to play. He hit 32 home runs between 2012 and 2013 in about 169 games. That's pretty rare power in today's game. There's some issues of plate discipline. I think he's a mediocre, average, low OBP guy. But if he's hitting 6th or 7th in that Padres lineup, playing good defense at 3rd base, and offering 18 to 22 home run power as a regular 3rd baseman, that trade's going to turn out to be a nice little pickup among the many moves that A.J. Preller made this offseason.
I'm not saying it's going to happen, but so far this spring, he's my biggest surprise. He is the guy that has turned my head the most, and I never thought I'd like him. Will Middlebrooks looks great. Now, whether he can keep it up or not, I don't know. But he's going to be very, very tough to keep on the bench. And he's a guy that fantasy owners can steal. And if he keeps it up, it's a tough par. But for him, that means a lot of doubles. And I like that.
Yeah, he's an endgame consideration, though, for sure. And you're right. It could be a lot of doubles, but more power there than you might think. Because a lot of the seasons, when you look back at his year-by-year numbers, where partial season stops through the minor leagues and even in the big leagues, kind of yo-yoing in and out of the lineup, dealing with a couple injuries. Maybe that fresh start is just what Will Middlebrooks needed to get back on track. All right, Bernie, let's talk about our second base rankings. We're going to go top 15 at second base and then top 15 at shortstop after we get through our second base. But we'll start at the bottom. I will go first. I've got Chase Utley at 15. Here's the thing. I don't really want him on my teams.
Oh, that's incredible.
But the guys who didn't make the list are all very similar. Like, Scooter Gennett was the first guy off for me. I think Aaron Hill's healthy. I think Gennett and Hill can do similar things to Utley right now. I think Jed Jerko is even kind of a decent bounce-back candidate. So if I miss out on a second baseman, I feel like there's more depth there at the position than usual this year.
I laugh because Utley's my 15. And I said to myself, DVR isn't even going to have this guy in the top 15. But you know what? He's still dangerous. He really is. And that's a nice playpen for him. I like him playing in Philadelphia. I always have. And he's a steady, gritty ball player who seems to be healthy. I'll take Chase Utley. I'll be happy to have him.
That ankle injury seems like it's kind of going away. He's picked up his activity over the last week or so. And I don't like the lineup around him at all, but He is my 15th ranked second baseman, just a better player than people give him credit for at this later stage of his career. At number 14, I've got Rougned Odor. I really like how he finished last season. Decent combination of both power and speed. I can see him moving up a little bit in the batting order there. They've mentioned Leonis Martin moving up to the leadoff spot, so Odor's not going to be an option there, but very young for his level. I still see another level or two possibly in that bat. Maybe we don't get that full step forward this year, but even if we don't, I think he belongs here.
At 14, I have Ben Zobrist because I think he's going to play there a lot. And I think there's still something left in the tank for him. He's a dangerous guy with runners on base. Although his numbers have not been great lately, I still will take him.
Yeah, Zobrist still offers that flexibility, kind of like a Chase Utley with more versatility, I think, in terms of the categorical expectations. I've got Colton Wong at 13. That probably means I'm not going to have Colton Wong anywhere. I've seen some projections for him that suggest 20-plus home runs. I don't think Colton Wong's a 20-home run guy. I think, as you've written him up a few times, he's a gap hitter with some home run power, not a lot. I think you're looking more like 12 to 14 home runs. Stolen bases might be his best fantasy category, but there's some question as to where he's going to hit the lineup. Maybe he moves down against lefties. Maybe he stays up against righties and scores a lot of runs. But I've got some reservations about Wong for this year, at least compared to the field.
I like him a lot better than you do, and he'll show up much higher for me. At 13, I have Odor. I think this guy is going to break out this year. He's still young. You know, we always thought it was going to be Profar, and Odor was like, and Sardinas were, you know, other guys. Well, Odor's the guy now, and I think the job is his. I think he will play with confidence. I like him at 13.
I've got Ben Zobrist at 12. As I mentioned before, the versatility is there. You're going to get five categories of the contributions. One in particular where I think he's going to be overlooked is run scored. The A's, they're going to mix and match. They're going to platoon. Their offense doesn't have Yoenis Cespedes anymore. It doesn't have Josh Donaldson or Brandon Moss anymore. Some people are going to look at that offense and say the offense stinks. They're not going to score enough runs. I think the A's offense won't be as bad as you think. Maybe that's a tepid endorsement, but I've got Ben Zobrist at number 12.
I've got Martin Prado at 12. I think he's a good ball player. He's nowhere the player that he was in Atlanta. In fact, he had a really tough time here in Arizona. But I think Martin Prado deserves to be a 12. He's a good hitter. He hits the ball too much to the right side for me. I'd like to see him pull more and use his power more. But Prado is in a nice lineup and slots pretty well there for me.
Yeah, this is where Prado would rank for me, too. I guess I'd have to stretch my list to 16, if only because I've got him listed as a third baseman in my overall sheet. So when I filter it down by position, he's one of those guys that gets cut off as a multi-position guy. But I think Prado versus Zobrist is a legitimate toss-up. I think you look at Prado in that Marlins lineup, you have to like where he landed. I do look back at his numbers, I think 2 years ago now, his final season with Atlanta. I think that might end up going down as the best season of his career, but I like what he was able to do after he was traded to the Yankees last year.
I do think he'll be eligible at second base in a lot of leagues. At 11, I know you have him ranked higher than I do. I've got Daniel Murphy at 11, and the only reason he's there is because I don't like the ballpark. I don't like the lineup. I like Murphy, but I think he's hurt by both those factors.
I'm only one spot ahead of you on Murphy. I've got him at 10. I've got Neil Walker at 11. And I think the decision between Murphy and Walker and even the guy who I have at number 9, I think it comes down to what you have on your roster and what you need. The thing I like about Neil Walker, I think he can get you 20 home runs, and I think the batting average is going to be pretty good. So the drawback here is that maybe he doesn't steal you any bases. A lot of these guys will run a little bit. But he's kind of atypical for a second baseman. I'm believing in the power that we saw last year from Neil Walker.
I have him much higher for that very reason. I'll talk about him when we get up that high. At 10, I've got Dustin Pedroia, which is a huge drop for me and how I usually see Pedroia. I think his best years are behind him. Yes, I know he's healthy, but I think the pitching has caught up with him. Boston really needs this guy to get on base for those big bats to drive him in. I'm not sure he can do it the same way he did it in the past. Pedroia, for me, is in decline.
Definitely in decline, but I do like that he's healthy. I've got Pedroia quite a bit higher. I'll talk more about him once we get up there. As I mentioned, I've got Daniel Murphy at 10, but I think he's very similar to Howie Kendrick. The only reason I have Kendrick ahead of Murphy, I like the Dodgers lineup as a whole more than the Mets lineup. I think Kendrick probably can edge Murphy in batting average too, but in terms of power, runs driven in, stolen bases, runs scored, I think they're going to be very similar because where Murphy might benefit from hitting higher in the order, I think Kendrick benefits more from having better hitters around him.
At nine, here's where I've slotted Colton Wong. Yes, you're right. I have talked about him as a gap hitter, and he really is a good gap hitter. It's a nice lineup. It's a good ballpark for him. He's another year older. He's not going to have the sophomore jinx, or it's a little bit longer than that now for him. I just think he's coming into his own, and I like Colton Wong at nine.
I've got Jason Kipnis at eight. I'm curious if he made your list at all. I know you've been frustrated by Kipnis at times, but you go back before last year, before he had the oblique injury and the offseason finger issue that slowed him down this spring, back-to-back years with at least 14 home runs, 14 back in 2012, 17 in 2013, 30 steals in back-to-back years, 86 runs scored in each of those seasons, a decent number of RBIs too at 76 and 84. Batting average is a little bit of a concern, but I feel like eighth on this list is a pretty good spot. I think he's still a top 100 overall type player. And this guy last year, Bernie, in some leagues, was being drafted in the second round. I mean, that's how high everybody was on Jason Kipnis a year ago. Maybe I'm lower on him even than a lot of the people out there, but I'm curious if he even made your list at all.
No, sir, he did not. And that's amazing for me because there was no bigger Jason Kipnis fan than I was. And I'll tell you what I saw this week. He still is scuffling against left-handed pitching. And the Indians see a lot of left-handed pitching because they have too many left-handed bats. He has not made the adjustments I think he should make. I do not think he is the Jason Kipnis of old, and he did not make my top 15. He's probably somewhere like 16 or 17. He's going to have a better season than I'm projecting, but I'm not buying the batting average. I think the stolen bases will be down. I think he's going to think twice before he runs. I think he's going to play tentatively, doesn't want to get hurt, doesn't want to blow out anything. I'm not on Jason Kipnis this year.
Who did you end up putting at eight?
At eight, I have Ian Kinsler, who is very close. He, again, for me, another guy in decline. He is not the Kinsler we used to know. He's not the guy that's going to run wild or hit home runs. He's still a good ball player. He still makes things happen. But he's kind of a middle-of-the-pack guy for me as opposed to a top four. He comes in at eight.
I think Kinsler's value gets saved by the lineup that he's in, but in terms of actual skills, he should be lower on my list than I have him. I've got him a few spots higher, so I'll talk about him in just a couple minutes. I've got D. Gordon at seven. I think there's a chance Gordon loses the leadoff job in Miami. They've got Christian Yelich who can do it. They've got Martin Prado, who's got a better career OBP than D. Gordon as well. He's going to run no matter what. The Marlins need him to be their regular second baseman, but I've got D. Gordon down at seven among my second basemen.
I have D. Gordon at seven also. I think that's where he belongs. I see that there will be some decline in his batting average. I recognize that. I don't think there will be a decline in the stolen bases because I think he's going to walk more. I think he's going to take more pitches, set up the big thumpers. I think Gordon fits very well there, and he fits well at seven for me. I like him a lot. He's going very high in every draft I've been in or auction I've been in. And I see why. You're going to get a lot of stolen bases.
I just feel like he's gotten inflated too much, and this is more along the lines of where he should go. I've got Dustin Pedroia at six. You brought him up before. I like the combination of power and speed. Maybe it's a dozen home runs and dozen steals at this point. Batting average should be very good. I mean, the way this works now, the batting average is down so much across the league. We're talking almost a 20-point difference now compared to 10 years ago. If you're trying to finish top four in your league in the NFBC, the target average used to be like right around 280 or 285. Now it's down at like 269. Like, that's a pretty big difference. I mean,
that's huge.
It's like 16, 17 points. So batting average is an overlooked category. Runs scored, Pedroia should get you a boatload of those. He may lead the American League in runs scored because the lineup that he plays in, a lot of it's team-driven. But a part of it's just finally having him healthy. I've got Dustin Pedroia at six, even though I'm not expecting a lot in terms of home runs.
I've got Neil Walker at six because I've always overlooked this guy. And every time I look up, all he's doing is hitting a home run, knocking in runs, scoring runs. He's still an underrated second baseman. In my opinion, he's an outstanding hitter, and we don't give him enough credit in fantasy. I like Neil Walker at 6, and if I get a chance to grab him, I'm going to do it.
He does seem very fairly priced. Pirates lineup a little bit underrated, I think, too, in terms of what they can do top to bottom, putting runs on the board. I've got the new bull. I've got Brian Dozier at 5. I think Jonathan Broxton used to be the bull, but Bull Dozier, why not? Brian Dozier, good combination of power and speed, batting average probably low, but I think the run production he offers is legitimate. 2020 seems like it's within reach. I mean, a lot of runs scored should be there if he's at the top of the order. Those turn into RBIs if they fade away if he moves down closer to the heart of the order.
I've got Howie Kendrick at 5 DVR, and all I'm going to say is watch out. Watch out for Howie Kendrick this year in this lineup. I saw it this week. I saw what he can do. He has not lost a step. He has not lost anything in his timing. I think with Jimmy Rollins at shortstop and Kendrick at second, this is a terrific up-the-middle combination, and they both look like they're teenagers. They're really playing with energy. Kendrick is a terrific hitter. I love what he's going to do at that ballpark. I really do. And in that lineup. So Kendrick is at 5.
Yeah, could be a massive increase in terms of his counting stats this year.
Right. And I put Dozier at 4. He's that good, and he's the second underrated player. You know, besides Walker, we don't talk about Dozier enough. He does an awful lot on that Twins team. He may be, overall, their best player now.
It's possible. Definitely possible that he's that hitter for that lineup. I've got Ian Kinsler up at the next spot at 4, so not too far off on him. This group, Kinsler, Dozier, Pedroia, on my overall rankings are very close together. I think you can make arguments for each of those three guys over each other. But again, a big part of Kinsler's appeal, much like Dustin Pedroia's, in that I think the position he has in the lineup that he's in will go a long way. I think the reason I have Kinsler ahead of Pedroia, I expect a little more power and a little bit more in terms of stolen bases that kind of breaks the tie. And again, you got to take a little bit more hit of a batting average hit from Kinsler. But I prefer Kinsler to Pedroia just slightly as things line up right now. There's a pretty big jump, though, between 4 and 3 on my list. I've got Anthony Rendon at 3, and he was previously at 1, but I'm a little bit worried about that knee injury possibly slowing him down and causing him not to run as much this year.
This is amazing. I dropped him from 2 to 3 today. No, it was today, this morning, because of the injury. I love Rendon. But I put him at 3 with Robbie Cano at 2 because Cano is healthy and Cano is still Cano. The home runs are going to fall off, but the RBIs will be there. The run scored will be there. The batting average will be there. And he's at 2 for me.
I've got Jose Altuve up at 2. I like Altuve quite a bit. I think the issue I have is that I think last year was probably as good as it gets. I think he's more likely to steal you 40 bags than 50. That's still valuable. He's going to be among the league leaders in average. He should score a decent number of runs. I think the Astros offense will be improved this year. But that 341 average from last year, that's coming down by what, 25, 30, 35 points? How much are you taking off his average?
Which makes him be a 320 hitter, which I love.
If he only loses 21 points, he's a 320 hitter. But that could come down more. I mean, he could be hit 305, and it wouldn't be bad or surprising, right? I mean, that wouldn't be an abnormal fluctuation for him.
Plus, he's going to steal, what, 40 to 50 bases. He's going to score probably more than 100 runs. He should. So that's three categories, and he's my number one second baseman. And they're tough categories to get. Those stolen bases are very rare. I have to have them. And I lost out on him. He went 3 overall in a draft I was in last week. 3 overall.
Wow. Was that a mixed league or AL only?
No, it was AL only.
Still, that he's going 3 overall is a pretty big jump. I've got Robbie Cano ahead of Altuve. I know the power fell off last year. I like that he still stole 10 bases. That was kind of hidden value in his numbers. I think the run scored count goes up. Having Nelson Cruz behind him, even though I'm not crazy about Cruz moving into Safeco, that's going to bump the run scored for Cano. He's extremely durable. Batting average has been there as consistently with Cano as really for any player in the league. It's really just not wanting to lose my league in the early part of round one. I guess it'd be the late part of round one, the early part of my draft, though. I don't want to make a pick that could come back to burn me. I know picking not to lose or playing not to lose can backfire in any game, but I like Cano just a little bit more than Altuve because we've seen it time and time again from him.
DVR, give me a number. What would you pay for him, AL-only auction?
AL-only, 12 teams, no inflation?
Inflation.
Like grass ball type inflation? Exactly. Are you asking me what I'm going to pay for Robinson Cano and grass ball?
Yeah.
Oh, man. In that league, what do we have, like 20% inflation at least? It's pretty high.
It's a little bit more probably.
I think you're talking 38.
See, I own him at 41, and he's killing me. I cannot keep him at 41. It's just undoable. He's not going to return that.
Probably not. I mean, where are you going to find a player like that in the pool?
I get it. See, that's the problem. If you look at the second base pool in the American League, available guys, it's very shallow. You're walking in the baby pool, you know? It's that shallow. Yes. No diapers allowed. I'll tell you what, I'm really scuffling. I'm struggling with this.
If it has diapers, I don't want it in my pool. I hear you. Makes me nervous. It's got to be a separate pool for the kids.
Saying 38, and I'm at 41, and those $3 are big.
Yeah, they're huge. I mean, that's I think you probably hold them, but it's pretty much a coin flip.
Yeah, it is. It really is.
Let's take a look at our shortstops here, Bernie. We'll try to move through these a little more quickly just so we don't run into an extra long episode here. At number 15, I've got Eric Ibar. Playing time, very stable. Decent number of runs scored because of the lineup. And, of course, speed, as we always get from Eric Ibar.
I agree with you. That's who's my number 15. And, by the way, this is a horrible group of players that I could not I could not rank these. You know, these guys run the gamut from good to mediocre. So Ibar is good, and he's probably better than 15, but that's where I've got him.
I've actually got J.J. Hardy at 15. Ibar's at 14. I had the lines messed up on my list here, so Ibar slightly ahead there. But there's a big drop at short. There's like four guys that are top 50 players and a bunch of guys who don't make the top 100. So that's sort of an ugly situation there. But Hardy, I think the back injury last year sapped the power. I think that's going to come back a little bit this year. 15 home runs, some RBIs at a decent average. Pretty good player. Very similar to the guy that I have ranked ahead of Eric Ibar. But who did you have at 14, Bernie?
I have Kong at 14 because I think he's got more power than people give him credit for Pittsburgh. The only question I have in my mind is he going to play and where? Could he play third base? Yes. Could he play shortstop? Yes. Could he play second base? Not in front of Neil Walker, but he is going to play. And Mercer's a good player too. But I like this kid, and I ranked him. I put him at 14.
I've got Johnny Peralta at 13. More of the same from him, much like J.J. Hardy. Just a little safer, I think, because we don't have that recent injury issue.
I've got Xander Bogaerts at 13 because I think it's bounce back time. Too good of a lineup for him not to shine. And if he doesn't, something's going to happen, and I don't know what it is. Good kid, good bat, 13. At 12, I have Danny Santana, another surprise, a guy that the Twins are counting on to play a decent shortstop, and I'm buying in.
I'm scared because the BABIP last year was over 400, so I think he's more of like a 265 type hitter. I think the speed is real. Not sure the power he flashed last year holds up. Santana did not make my list. I've got Elcides Escobar at 12. I think the fact that Ned Yost likes to run helps Escobar stay pretty consistent in the stolen base category. He doesn't strike out a lot, so the batting average should be there. He puts the ball in play. 65, 70 runs scored, 25, 30 steals, maybe a little more in the stolen base category, but it speaks to the lack of depth there. It's really, do you want speed with Escobar or Ibar, or do you want some power with Peralta or Hardy?
Yeah, I've got them both up higher because of those particular categories. At 11, I've got Chris Owings of the Diamondbacks because I think he's a good hitter in a nice park.
I've got him just on the outside looking in right now. If he shows he's healthy this spring, I think that goes a long way towards giving me a chance to bump him up a little bit. But Chris Owings did not make the cut for me. At number 11, I've got Javi Baez. I'm going to take the chance on the power. I know the batting average could be awful if he continues to strike out, but his combination of power and speed, it's unlike any player anywhere on this list.
You know what? I am not call me crazy. I am not convinced he's breaking camp with these guys. I'm not convinced yet.
Possible. They have options.
Yeah, yeah. The swings and misses are just bad. That's all I can say. My jury is still out. I'm not saying he won't, but right now I'm not sure of Javi Baez. At 10, I think is where I'm at, is Elvis Andrus. Another declining guy. He has disappointed me in the past. I'm not going any higher.
Who did you have at 11, Bernie?
That was Chris Owings.
Oh, yeah, Owings was at 11. Okay, Andrus at 10 for you. I've got Alexi Ramirez at 10. I like him. I think last year was a little bit fluky. There's nice durability track record here. The power is like 10 to 12 home run power for me. The speed's pretty consistent. I like the lineup around him, but I think he's going to be overpriced based on last year.
Very possible. Who do you have at 9?
Gene Segura at 9. I think there's a chance they mix and match a little bit in that lineup. Maybe he leads off against lefties, moves down against righties, but I think you're at least going to get cheap steals, more power than somebody like Ibar, probably more power even than, of course, Elcides Escobar, who I don't think has any power whatsoever. I think the Brewers lineup gets overlooked sometimes too. Team context, very favorable. I think we're going to see a nice bounce back from Gene Segura.
Gene Segura did not make my list. And that is a shock for me because I'm a huge fan. He's going to have to show a complete turnaround from last year, which, as we have noted before, was both physical on the field and emotional with the loss of his child. Let me wait and see on Gene Segura. I've got him in a lot of leagues, didn't make my team. Number 9, Starlin Castro. The most lackadaisical guy I've seen on the field, but when he wants to play, man, can he play.
Yeah, he is Mr. Does not care sometimes, but maybe with the team being a lot more competitive, some of the young talent around him, things are going to change. I've got him a little bit higher. I've got Jimmy Rollins at 8. Love the lineup around him. Average might be the only category where he's a negative contributor, but everything else, the runs, the steals, the home runs, the runs driven in, should all be better than most for this position.
I've got Johnny Peralta at 8 because I think he's going to be very dangerous. This guy is becoming a very good clutch hitter. I would not want him on my infield if I were the Cardinals, but he's going to be there, and he's going to hit, and he's going to drive in some big runs. At 7, that's where I have J.J. Hardy. I look for a big return from him. He is a much better hitter than we saw last year. I think he went forever without hitting a home run. I think he'll hit some this year.
Yeah, I think we agree on the bounce back. I think you have him a little more high than I do. I've got Xander Bogaerts at 7. I like what he did for the first 2 months last year. They signed Stephen Drew, brought him in to play short, moved Bogaerts to third. Everything fell apart then. I think there's a really special bat here. We're going to see that over the course of this year. There's a lot less pressure on him too right now. He's going to hit in the bottom third of that order as it's currently constructed. So I've got Xander Bogaerts at 7. Who did you have up at 6?
That's where I have Elcides Escobar. I mean, he really does help that lineup out tremendously. Gets on base, steals bases, makes things happen. He's worth it in fantasy for me.
By the way, I didn't rank Ben Zobrist among shortstops. If I did, he would go probably right here ahead of Bogaerts, but I didn't count him as part of this list since I looked at him as a second baseman.
I did too.
Elvis Andrus is at 6 on my list. I think he's a similar player to Elcides Escobar, but I do think he's in a better lineup. I think with Fielder and Chu healthy, especially, the Rangers are going to put a lot more runs on the board. Disappointing year last year, to say the least. I just have to wonder if he can bounce back a little bit and show us something that you know, explains why the Rangers made such a long-term commitment to him.
Yeah, I really don't know. That's why I've dropped him to 10. I've got Jimmy Rollins at 5 because this is a new Jimmy Rollins. This is a guy who's on a winning team now, and I think he loves it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's going to be a complete turnaround there. Just the extra life kind of he'll benefit from getting to play on a team contending again. after ending up in a rebuilding situation in Philly. Starlin Castro checked in at 5 for me. Again, I think the combination of power and speed and the volume of playing time for a guy that can hit for average, I think that's what really carries Starlin Castro's value.
Yeah, I've got Alexi Ramirez at 4 because I like everything he does. I saw him take such nice, easy swings this week and drive the ball to the outfield. He's got some power that people don't realize. I like Alexi Ramirez. He's in at 4.
I've got Jose Reyes up at 4. I think with Reyes, the lineup's still good, hitter-friendly environment, played hurt last year. Pretty much a 5-category shortstop, maybe 4.5 because the RBIs will be a little bit low as a leadoff guy. But I the turf's a little bit of a concern for me, but his skills are still pretty stable.
Yeah, I've got Reyes at 3. And I do think the turf is a big concern of mine for the running game. But he knows his role now with Donaldson there, another big bat. He knows I have to get on base. I have to steal bases. Let those three guys knock me in. And I think they will.
I've got Hanley at 3. It's the last year. He's probably going to be eligible at shortstop because he played it so much last year. Enjoy it while it lasts because I think the power should be there. The run production should be there. How many doubles will Hanley Ramirez hit off the monster this year, Bernie?
You can't even count them. I did not rank him simply because he's going to be an outfielder, and I wanted to be pure on this. But he is going to be eligible at shortstop, and he would go very high, 1, 2, or 3. This playpen for him is going to be phenomenal as long as, A, they win and he wants to play, and, B, he stays healthy. If those things happen, the sky is the limit.
I've got Ian Desmond up at 2. Everything to like here except for maybe the batting average, but the power, the speed, the run production, it's all there with Ian Desmond. Contract year coming up, too. This is a guy that turned down $100 million as part of a long-term extension. Got to think that he's extremely focused going into this season.
Yeah, I've got him at 2, and you know what? I think he's breathing down Tulowitzki's neck if Tulowitzki doesn't play. This guy is an extremely good, well-balanced ball player. He is going to break the bank. He's an extremely good hitter with power. I've got him at 2, and I've got Tulowitzki at 1.
Tulo, I don't know what to expect from him in terms of games played this year, but if he can just find a way to stay on the field for 135, 140 games, there's no telling what he could do. I mean, he could be the second-best player overall in fantasy if you're able to keep him on the field for a full season.
And this marks the 4th year we've said that.
Yeah, it's pretty much the norm at this point when it comes to Troy Tulowitzki. So those are our rankings for second base and shortstop. A lot of ground that we covered there. We do have a mailbag question here, Bernie, before we sign off. And it's very relevant because the player involved or one of the players involved is having a tremendous spring. This is from Brian on Twitter. How early are you willing to take Chris Bryant and Jock Peterson in a draft? Bryant's playing in a National League only league. We'll think of this more in terms of overall, and you could basically cut that range in half to compensate for an only league. When do you take the chance on Chris Bryant, Bernie?
Early, early, early. He's the real deal. What can I tell you? He is for real. I don't know what round. He's the first baseman off the board. First, third baseman off the board for me because he is going to do it. Batting average is not going to do, he's not going to hit well. But the home runs, the RBIs, the runs scored, they're all going to be there. He'll also steal a couple bases. Let's not forget the guy is 6'5.5" playing third base. He will not be playing third base in 2 years. He will be playing right field. It might be sooner than that. These defensive issues are real. His arm is that strong. He could play right field, but he is a terrific hitter. What do you think?
I love what he brings to the table. I don't think I would take him quite that early, but I'm still taking him as a top 100 overall player. He's 89th on my overall rankings right now. You're gonna miss a few games early in the year. They'll probably call him up on April 17th to avoid giving him a full year of service time. Again, it's a handful of games, so he could play 145 for the Cubs this year. If he does that, he can hit 25 home runs.
He'll hit more.
The ceiling is tremendous. If you're talking about a mixed league draft, let's say 12 teams, end of round 7, early round 8 is probably where I think he goes. That's where I'm willing to take him. Maybe a little earlier than that. If you're in an only league, cut that in half. Late 3rd round, early 4th round might be the place. And, of course, in a keeper league, bump him up even higher. Jock Peterson, contact issues could be a problem. I could see him sitting against lefties because they have Scott Van Slyke. They've got Chris Heisey, a couple guys they could put out there in center field. How early do you take Jock Peterson, Bernie?
Not very early. He's a 5-tool guy. I'm writing about him this week. A lot of swing and misses. Good player. No one overall great tool, but 5 good tools. I'd say he's a middle-of-the-draft type guy. He's going to hit 270, 275, maybe a little bit better. The power is a surprise. Hit 33 home runs last year. Stole 30 bases, by the way. So you got to pay for that. And I don't know if he's going to be running with the Dodgers. I originally thought he'd be hitting up in the lineup. He's not. He's going to hit like 8th or 7th. That's going to impact his draft status. Kind of a middle of the pack to lower the pack guy.
Probably 3 to 4 rounds later than Bryant in a National League only league. Probably 7 to 8 rounds later than Bryant in a mixed league for the reasons that you mentioned. I think batting average in particular is a category where he may really scuffle here in his first year as a big league player, but definitely a lot of long-term value for Jock Peterson. Bernie, before we sign off, what's coming up over at Pipeline?
3 new profiles coming next week, including Peterson being one of them, and I'll be doing my second blog on what I've seen so far in spring training. And as we get closer and closer, I'll be making my one-loss predictions for every team, how many they'll win, how many they'll lose. Last year, I have to say, I guess I was pretty lucky. I hit like 80% of them. So we'll see what happens this year. And I haven't seen as many games as I have, but and there's a lot more parity.
Yeah, definitely it looks more wide open in a few divisions than it did this time last year. I am headed to New York for Tout Wars, so be talking to you early again next week as we move through draft season. The views and opinions of Shore Hops are those of Derek and Bernie. And no other entity. If you'd like to sponsor this podcast, you can do that by emailing shannon@rotowire.com. If you have a mailbag question for us, let us know on Twitter. He's at Bernie Pleskoff. I'm at Derek Van Riper. At Short Hops is the Twitter handle for this podcast. Just use the hashtag mailbag. That way I know it's a question that you'd like answered on the air. Good question from Brian this week, so we appreciate that. Bernie, it's been a pleasure as always. Look forward to talking to you again next week.
My pleasure to talk to you next week. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a great week.
Take care, everybody.